Welcome to the podcast. This is Dr. Val Jones, founder of GetBetterHealth.com. Today we'll be speaking with Dr. Avram Blooming, who is clinical professor of medicine at USC and a dear friend of the blog. Dr. Blooming, welcome to the call. Thank you so much for joining us. Today we'll be talking, of course, about the mammogram controversy and what women are supposed to make of all of this. So to begin, Dr. Blooming, I wonder if you could help us understand a little bit about the conflicting guidelines that are now out there for the general population to consider. What do they mean? What should people do about it? And what do you tell your patients?
I think that guidelines are suggestions made primarily to physicians, not to patients. And I don't mean to take a paternal attitude here. Patients are clearly very important parts of the healthcare equation, but the guidelines can't be taken in a vacuum. They must be taken superimposed on everything that we know about breast cancer. And the guidelines, although they are general, must be brought to bear on any individual patient's risk and benefit. And it's only by sitting down with a physician, at least today, that a patient will understand the benefit risk for that given patient to determine whether she should start having mammograms at 40 or at 50, whether she should have mammograms every year or every 2 years. And what wasn't even entered into in those guidelines is whether or not she should have MRIs in addition to mammograms and when, if ever, those are appropriate.
What would you say to the average woman, I suppose when I say average, I mean someone without a history of breast cancer in the family, who's 40 years old? What are the kinds of things that she would need to talk to her doctor about to figure out maybe if it would be beneficial for her to get mammograms regularly or not?
If she is a healthy 40-year-old woman with no family history of breast cancer who has already given birth to children, ideally her first child being born before she was 25, she neither smokes nor drinks in any significant way, I think it is not unreasonable for her to have her first mammogram at age 50. Having said that, I don't know of such an idealized person, perhaps because my practice is biased being an oncologist. I see people with histories or risk factors that would predispose to the development of breast cancer. Let me give you two competing statistics just to show you how confusing it is before we try to resolve it.
Yeah.
There was a presentation by Blake Cady. Blake Cady is a surgeon at Harvard. And he has recently, at a 2009 breast cancer symposium in October in San Francisco, said that women who do not undergo mammography account for 75% of breast cancer deaths. How interesting. So what that suggests is that women who have mammograms, and this is generally mammograms starting at age 40 and mammograms on an annual basis, constitute less than 25% of the women who die of breast cancer. Well, you hear that and you figure, of course, I'm going to have mammograms every year. On the other hand, at that same symposium, there was a study out of Norway by a fellow named Per Henrik Zal, who said that the majority of overdiagnosed lesions that are called breast cancer on mammogram would spontaneously regress if they weren't screened. Obviously, once they're screened and they're picked up, we don't give them a chance to regress, we treat them. According to Dr. Zal, he thinks that close to 50% of lesions that are picked up really early would never become malignant. Now, there are other people like Robert Smith, who's the director of cancer screening for the American Cancer Society, who says that number is closer to 9%, not 50%. And now you have people arguing statistics with the public sitting by and perspiring because there's nothing else they can do. I think the best course of action at this point is to take everything you read to your physician, a physician who hopefully is aware of both the debate and the numbers behind the debate, and say, what do you think I should do? And you don't take an order from your physician, but you take a suggestion. So that clearly, if it's a woman with a family history of breast cancer, and family history may be mild to a very serious family history, an initial mammogram at age 40 or sometimes even younger, perhaps at age 35, is appropriate. Depending upon what the pattern of that mammogram looks like, depending upon what other risk factors there might be, will determine how frequently follow-up mammograms should be done. There is no average person. Everybody is relatively unique. And that's the problem with looking at these guidelines and saying, well, I'm an average woman. What should I do? Nobody is an average woman. And the guidelines say you don't necessarily need a mammogram every 2 years, but it's worth looking at your particular case with a physician, understanding what the risks of having frequent mammograms are, frequent meaning annual, and what the benefit of having those mammographies are. And I think the take-home message is, don't do this on your own.
Well, you mentioned the risks. I wonder if you could describe the risks for me.
Sure. The first risk that used to be held up is the risk of radiation, and it was thought that for every million mammograms that are done in a country with 300 million people, 50% of whom are women, you might induce a breast cancer in one. Well, that doesn't sound like very much, and in point of fact, the current radiation dose from a good mammogram is equivalent to the radiation you'd get from cosmic rays on a round trip from the East Coast to the West Coast of the United States. And I don't know anybody who determines how frequently they're going to make that trip by how much radiation they think they'll be exposed to. I think the biggest risk is there are abnormalities that are seen on mammogram. The abnormalities require more intensive studies to pinpoint them. An abnormality is then often biopsied. Sometimes the biopsy is misread, and you end up with more workup and sometimes even more surgical treatment that is unnecessary, in addition to whatever aggravation and expense accumulates as a result of that process. I think those are the major risks concerned.
And of 1,000 women in the ages of 40 to 50, I guess, how many of them might get a false positive that results in an unnecessary surgery?
I don't know the answer to that, and the reason I don't is it really depends on the quality of the equipment, the quality of the physician, and the population you're dealing with, and I don't think there's any way I can give you a meaningful answer that covers our broad population. I think it's worth knowing that the 1 in 8 or now 1 in 7 incidence of breast cancer that's used to frighten women becomes real only in women over the age of 80, and that, in fact, the incidence is much lower when we're dealing with women of about 40. I believe the incidence is something like 1 in 2,200. So we're not dealing with that common an incidence of breast cancer.
Whereas, do you have a feeling for how many lives might possibly be saved with early detection on a mammogram in a woman who's between the ages of 40 and 50?
The reason I can't give you a number for that is that, again, assumes that we're dealing with a population that is homogeneous enough to give you a number that's meaningful for anybody listening to this blog. And I think that's only relevant when you know a particular patient's findings. For example, premenopausal women often have dense breasts. Dense breasts may make mammograms harder to read than in women who have largely fatty breasts. In addition, family history, alcoholic history, weight and height, even cigarette smoking in some studies, are all potential risk factors for the development of breast cancer. Now, the age of your parents at the time you're born is felt to be a risk factor for the development of cancer, breast cancer. The weight of the placenta at the time you are born is felt to be a risk factor. I don't know how significant those are, but all the risk factors have to be taken into consideration in order to give any particular woman advice about when to start having mammograms and how often to have them. And at least according to our current state of knowledge, experienced physicians are in the best position to evaluate that with a given patient.
Now, do you have any sense of why the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force came out with these guidelines that conflict with what we've been telling?
Society.
Yeah. Why are they doing that?
The first honest answer is I don't know. The second answer is Diane Petitti, who's an investigator in San Francisco and a very respected investigator in the field of breast cancer, has been quoted as saying, look, these are only guidelines based upon analysis of a very large database. And what she means is this needn't apply to any single individual. One of the major reasons, I think, for the problem is before we had routine mammograms, the percentage of very early breast cancer called ductal carcinoma in situ, which is non-invasive and very, very curable breast cancer, was about 3 to 5% of the total breast cancer population. Now that we're doing routine mammograms, the percentage of these relatively early and very curable cancers is closer to 35%. And so, not surprisingly, what we're seeing is, first, a greater incidence of breast cancer. We're picking up many more breast cancers, and an overall better cure rate because a lot of the cancers we're picking up are these very early, very treatable, and very curable breast cancers. The question that's raised is, well, how many of these would never become clinically significant breast cancer? I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you that there was a study that was done in one of the Scandinavian countries years ago that took women between the ages of 40 and 55, healthy women in this Scandinavian country, I think it was Norway, who were killed in automobile accidents. And the incidence of breast cancer in that population should be about 1 in 1,000. And in fact, what they found, not 1 in 1,000, maybe 1%, and what they found is the incidence of breast cancer in that population, which was meticulously autopsied, so they looked very carefully at all the organs in the body, including the breasts, was 34%. Well, the overwhelming majority of those microscopically proven breast cancers would never have become clinically significant because we know from following a similar population of women of that age who were otherwise healthy that only 1% or 1 in 100, not 34 in 100, would ever develop breast cancer. Now that we're getting very good at picking up these very early lesions, we are almost certainly picking up lesions that would never become clinically significant, but we're not smart enough yet to be able to say, well, this is breast cancer that we don't have to treat, and this is breast cancer that we do have to treat, and therefore we treat all of them, and we get a lot of credit for curing the overwhelming majority of them. But as in any medical intervention, treatment does have downsides. There are people who have serious problems just from the surgery done to remove the breast cancer. And I don't know yet how many of these that we pick up might not require treatment.
Mm. Wow, that's really amazing.
It makes it a very difficult problem. And we're facing, as I'm sure you know, a very similar problem with cancer of the prostate.
Exactly. This does sound very much like that.
Very similar. we don't yet know how to define cancer except by the microscopic appearance of what we biopsy. That isn't cancer. That's the smoke, not the fire. But until we really know how to recognize the fire, we rely on that for the diagnosis without being sure that we can predict with certainty what would happen without treatment versus what would happen with treatment.
So overall, do you feel that the Preventive Services Task Force guidelines make a positive impact on clinical care, or do you think they muddy the waters, or do you think, you know, this is going to have some kind of positive outcome where people who might not need mammograms will opt out, or that will save money that way? Or I'm just a little confused as to...
Of course you are, and you are a very knowledgeable physician. And imagine women who aren't.
And I know.
The end result, and I got this from many of my patients today, the end result is tremendous confusion. Guidelines for medical care are still intended for physicians, not patients. That doesn't mean that patients should be excluded from hearing them. And again, I don't mean to be paternalistic, but when patients are given the guidelines, they have no table in which to put it to be able to assess who to follow. And the way it's set up is, are you going to believe the American Cancer Society? Are you going to believe the most recent guidelines that came out of the Public Health Service? And how do they know? They don't. So I think the way it's being publicized overall is a negative, even though the accumulation of data, which is really what this was intended to do, is always a positive as long as the data can be put into perspective.
Absolutely. Well, Av, do you have any final thoughts about this controversy or issue that you'd like to get across to a public audience?
Absolutely. Find a physician that you trust and respect, and work with that physician just the way you can work with an architect or a family planner or somebody who brings expertise to the table, not in an arrogant way, but in a way that can make your understanding of this information work for you.
You've been listening to a podcast with Dr. Avram Blooming, who is clinical professor of medicine at USC. I'm Dr. Val Jones, founder of GetBetterHealth.com.